I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher, who may in fact be enjoying a victory cigar this week as he is residing in the state of champions as we speak at this very moment. The Cavaliers winning the NBA title, and of course, man who Les is very familiar with, Dean Ambrose, now the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. How do you like those cigars?
How about that? I got sick in my stomach from smoking some made cigars. You know, first of all, I know it's not a basketball show, but it should be for this very fucking reason. What you saw in that 7-game series is exactly what professional wrestling should be. You know, I wasn't sure that the Cavs were going to win it till like 25 seconds before the end of the game. Stop and think about the way this was laid, you know, and some people said, well, it's a work too. You know what? If it is, it was beautifully done. They drew me in, which is what is supposed to happen in this, in our business as well. But, the Warriors have won more games in a single season than any team in history. The Cavs were down 3-1. No one in the history of the NBA championship series has ever come back from 3-1 and won the series. Steph Curry was the MVP of the league, and there's people starting to question, well, is LeBron really what LeBron is supposed to be? And at the end of this thing, the Cavs came from 3-down to tie it up, went back into the Lions' Den, basically the Warriors' home court, which obviously everyone feels that you know, is a bit of an advantage, if not a decided advantage. The lead in the last game seven, changed 25 times. And at the end of it, the Cavaliers came out as the world champions, first championship to go to Cleveland since 1964. And LeBron James led both teams in scoring, assist, rebounding, shooting percentage. And Curry, whether it's due to injury or whatever, seemed to fade. And it was a great friggin' series, and that's exactly what our business isn't for the most anymore.
A lot of twists and turns, a lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of times when it looked like it was decided only for someone like LeBron and the Cavs to come back from the dead. It's what makes it fun. It makes good TV. It makes good professional wrestling.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. I was excited. And you know what? I don't live in Cleveland, never lived in Cleveland, but it's just such a great story that I got excited about it, too. And again, that's part of the deal. And I'm happy for those guys. They busted their ass and earned every bit of it. And you know what? I'm happy for Dean Ambrose, too. You know, the kids worked hard, you know. He's paid his dues, and now he has a chance to reap the benefits. Now, whether that's, you know, whether it's short-term or long-term or whatever it is, you know, he can say he's been there. Oh, and this is kind of funny. An acquaintance of mine from Dayton, who's a big wrestling fan, had put an email on Facebook I've never seen it, that at one point when Dean Ambrose was John Moxley in the HWA, that he had cut a promo down, I guess by the, you know, one of the rivers around here anyway, And in the promo, he said how he got his start in professional wrestling was I caught him trying to steal my car and put him to work. And I actually got an email from somebody say, did he really try to steal your car? Let me verify here. You're right this moment. No, Dean Ambrose never tried to steal my car. But I thought, wow, that must have been a hell of a promo. I have never seen it, but it must have been good. Life is good, I guess. What else is going on?
Well, I wanted to ask you just a little bit more now, while we're on the subject of Dean Ambrose, to tell folks, especially those who may be new subscribers, maybe listening for the first time, checking us out now, to talk a little bit about your history with Dean, going back to, he didn't exactly start with you per se, but you did a lot of work with him early in his career.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, he started with the Red Barn Flea Market in Batavia, Ohio, which is, just on the outskirts of the greater Cincinnati area. And I guess that's where he first came and saw matches and saw that, the sign saying Les Thatcher's main event pro wrestling camp. And so that's, how he started, and without stealing my car, and got his foot in the door. And, shortly thereafter actually sold the company. That's where he began his training. And then he and I hooked up, on a more permanent basis spent more time together once he had actually gotten his feet wet and started in the business, at the independent level. And I started, going in to work with, the advanced guys once a week for the guys that were the owners of the company at that point in time. And so that's how he and I, and obviously, he caught my eye because he was one of the guys that was there consistently, one of the guys that worked hard, one of the guys that kept asking questions and wanted to learn, which is, for those who don't know or should know and don't, that's really a prerequisite for, getting your foot in the door and learning. So, he had been looked at by a former member of the WWE, excuse me, pardon me, talent relations people, and had been told if he would put on some size that, they would actually possibly give him a tryout. But then this person was let go from the company or quit the company or whatever the case may be and left WWE. So when I was made aware of this, he wasn't really, up on nutrition and that sort of thing. And obviously that's part of my background, from competitive bodybuilding. So anyway, we sat down, we put him together a nutritional plan, and he put on some size. And when he did, I picked up the phone and called Tom Pritchard and told him what had been promised to Dean. And so Tom set the wheels into motion, and he got his first tryout. And I guess, as they say in the movies, the rest is history. So,
are you now going to be putting on your business card, trainer of the WWE World Heavyweight Champion?
Everybody that's touched him will be putting that on. I'm sure it's on 16 other business cards already. I'm happy for him. I'm proud of my involvement with him. I know we're going to talk about this at some point too. A number of the guys in the NXT Cruiserweight Classic, I've had the opportunity and the pleasure and honor to work with. And so, to me, that's when guys show a desire to learn, to improve, to become better, I'm all for working with. A lot of times when I go someplace for the first time, I'll tell, we were going to spend a weekend together. If you are the worst athlete I've ever seen in my life, and I see you're working hard and you're doing your best to improve and trying to do what we're asking you to do, I'll give you all the time in the world. You can be the best athlete I've ever seen, and if you've got your ass on your shoulders or an attitude, I don't have 5 minutes for you, because... it's those guys, because, this is a business unto itself. It's so different. And I've had young men who had no athletic background whatsoever become proficient professional wrestlers. And I've seen guys with amazing athletic backgrounds and bad attitudes who aren't with us any longer. So, you know, attitude and work ethic are just an extremely important part of our industry.
You referenced the Cruiserweight Classic. Let's talk about that now. Before we get into some of the guys that you've worked with, I know that you had the opportunity to view a couple of these Facebook Live videos that WWE put out yesterday. One, a little conversation between Corey Graves and Finn Balor, and the other was the actual opening ceremonies for the Cruiserweight Classic, where each of the participants was introduced. And you got a little rundown from Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan on the participants, setting up the TV show, which will begin in mid-July. And just your overall impressions of the way they have put this thing together so far.
Listen, you know, I said this about the last, the NXT show I watched a couple weeks ago. And again, my hat's off to the athletes, obviously. But more importantly, at this, you know, what we're talking about today is the people behind the scenes, the production crew, the booker or bookers, whoever that happened to be or they happened to be. Because what I've seen thus far, it comes across as classy, and it's a professional athletic event. Let me stress that once again. It is a professional athletic event. And I posted, honestly, this morning on Facebook, not Facebook, but on Twitter, you know, let the entire industry take note, please, and copy that. It, you know, I'm so bored to tears of watching bad comedy and spot monkeys. And these guys, you know, and listen, let me say this. I know because it is Cruiserweights, we're going to see some high spots. And I'm not adverse to high spots as such. I'm adverse to a match of all high spots and at 100 miles an hour. But yeah, the way they've presented, the way they introduced these guys, the way they presented the athletes, excellent. And, you know, you watch some, you know, I watch something like that, and it makes me proud to be a part of this industry. And then there's, sometimes I watch some things, and if someone walked in while I was watching it and said, I'm a shoe salesman. I just watch this occasionally because they actually give you nothing to be proud of, you know, and these guys have. And like I say, I don't know, you know, who the mover and shaker is behind the scenes necessarily. I know a lot of the guys down there that I have a history with, you know, Adam Pearce, Terry Taylor, that are, you know, in the training, Steve Regal. Those are all guys who absolutely have a respect and understand the, you know, what the industry has been and should be and hopefully will be again. But it's an amazing setup, and I'm looking forward to watching the entire tournament if I get the opportunity.
For those of you who have avoided the spoilers for the complete first round, which was taped last night at Full Sail University, you will notice in the copy that precedes this fine podcast where you should fast forward to, because there very well may be a few spoilers here and now, Les, as we begin to talk about some of the guys who are in the tournament that are moving on to round two. And you nearly pitched a clean sweep in terms of guys that you've done some work with. A lot of your guys went on to round two.
Yeah, you know, and I'm happy, you know, and when I say work with, it's not necessarily that I trained these guys, but I had the opportunity, you know, in some cases they were guys when I ran a year-long tournament in L.A. a couple years ago when I was looking for guys who could wrestle. I'm doing parentheses, my fingers, in quotation, wrestle. These were guys that I picked because they could get on the mat and go. And it wasn't just all about high spots. And Finn Balor, in doing a promo for this thing, was asked someone who he'd never seen before that he might be interested in watching, and he mentioned Drew Gulak. And I said, well, the guy's got Finn's a class act, and I don't know Finn. Because, yeah, here's a kid who has, my God, he's a hell of a worker. He's a hell of an athlete. He has so much respect for the industry. And, well, you know, I see that Gabe has a main event for Evolve. I forget which city or which show it's on. That I had it's a match that I booked a few years ago in L.A. And that's Drew Gulak against Timothy Thatcher. And if you get it, you know, I'll tell you right now, if you get an opportunity to watch it, it's going to be a technical classic, and it will be you can get an education on how to work from these two guys. Besides Drew, Tony Nese, Brian Kendrick, Brian, you know, Spanky, as he's called by those of us who know him, was let go by WWE before the developmental crew came to me. And on his own dime, he moved to Cincinnati and worked with us for several months here. Because he thought it was the thing, you know, it would help advance him. And whether it did or not, I can't say, but I hope it did. And so he's one of the guys that's moving on in the tournament, as is Tony Nese, who was in the tournament in L.A. for us. Johnny Gargano, who actually won that tournament in L.A. for us, who also a Buckeye. Ohio's doing all right this past 7 days. And Cedric Alexander from who was with ROH, who I had the opportunity to work with the last 2 years when we did the 4 day camps in Charlotte. And I'm happy for all these guys. And did I miss anybody? I know I told you who before we started. And
let's not leave out Anthony Bennett.
Oh, that's right. Yes. My friend, I call him Kid and Play because of the haircut. But I've had the opportunity to work with Anthony, at the Monster Factory, and I'm sure Danny and the boys there are happy. Damn, I'm getting choked up here. Happy for him and proud of him, and he owes me a new pair of sunglasses too, by the way. Them cool glasses that he wore during the opening presentation. So. Tommaso Ciampa, I first worked with him, and he came with a group out of Boston who also had Kofi Kingston in that group. They came down six, seven, eight guys out of New England to train a 3 day camp that we did in the Carolinas. Tom Pritchard, myself, Terry Taylor, and Ricky Steamboat. And that's where I first met Tommaso Ciampa, who was wrestling at the time as Thomas Penmanship. So, yeah, all these guys, and it's been a long run to get to that point. Tommaso, actually, I guess he and Gargano maybe had the match of the first round, from what I'm understanding. And somebody had to be eliminated, but I know he's been working in NXT. So, I hopefully he'll be around, and it's not meaning that he's gone for the duration, as it were. So, yeah, I'm happy for all these guys. They're all hard workers. They're all kids that take the business seriously. It's not a game with them. It's their life. It's their passion, legitimately their passion. And I'm proud to, in whatever small part I've been associated with them, to have been associated with them, and wish them the best of luck.
So I believe the Cruiserweight Classic, let me check the calendar here. Believe begins on the 13th of July, and they're going to have their take on, which is another nice touch, I thought, the March Madness bracketology kind of shows. Well, the week before, on July 6th, they're going to have their own bracketology, where the first round brackets are going to be revealed. It's going to be a show with Corey Graves and Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan breaking down those first round matchups, and I guess looking ahead to potential matchups down the line as the tournament continues, which is another one of those things, Les, that really falls under the category of presenting it as sport and just a really nice professional touch. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, that's the thing that I see with NXT that I'm so impressed with. You know, it's not necessarily just the athletes or the fact that that they're good workers, or it's just the way they're showcased, the presentation. again, to make some similar comparison, and of course, this is a much higher dollar, presentation and than we did in LA, but, you know, we tried to add some class. You know, we brought all the, in each round, we brought the athletes to the ring, to be introduced and to do the national anthem. And then, you know, we had the referee bring them out for, instructions. We had corner men to sort of, imitate, UFC, you know, with a water bucket. They had Vaseline if there was a small cut, you know, to shut it down. And bottled water, but also, if indeed somebody, you know, were to get, cut really bad, then, you know, it would have been stopped at that point. But, so yeah, you know, so again, you know, you can have, great talent, and great intentions, but if the presentation, if basically, you know, it's how you present, you know, it was like a great, you know, if you're going to NASCAR and you're putting you can have a great motor, a great driver, and there's that, and the car looks shabby and, you know, junky, then it's perceived as such. And that's, I think, one of the biggest problems with our industry right now is it's not necessarily the product as a whole, but the way it's presented and you know, and again, I will emphasize, as far as I'm concerned, the overemphasis on stupid comedy is not to my, you know, to my liking. And, you know, I can't speak for the world, but I think, you know, it would the industry would be better served by being given a, you know, a better showcase and being showcased better. And, you know, presented to the public with more class and professionalism.
Got a couple of questions this week that came to us in our thread on the board from last week's show. One about, I hope I'm pronouncing the gentleman's name correct, Dennis Gauthier Sr., retired professional wrestler, brother-in-law of the Rougeaus, because his grandson is in the first round, most likely, a draft pick for the NHL and the NHL draft. And the person asking the question wanted to know if you knew Dennis. Was he any good? Did you have any stories about him?
I don't even know the name. I'm not sure where he wrestled. Obviously, never for a promotion that I was involved with. Jacques is the only Rougeau, and he wrestled under. I was trying to think what name. Jerry, I think it was Jerry something or other, when he had actually been in Georgia, in Atlanta. And this was when Barnett owned the Knoxville, you know, bought the Knoxville territory from Ron Fuller, and he came up and worked with us there for a period of time. And that's actually the only Rougeau that I've, you know, had the opportunity to ever be associated with or work with. So I'm not sure, you know, the name doesn't ring a bell with me, which isn't to say that he didn't do well somewhere. It's just that I don't know the name, nor have I ever been involved with him personally.
Another question here for you about the old Cincinnati Gardens, which is unfortunately going to be taken down. But we got to hold that thought, Les, because I just got a super secret text message from our equally super secret special guest this week.
Okay, well, let's get super secret then.
So we've got everything squared away. Our special guest is on the line right now, Les, a guy you know very well who is getting ready for one of the marquee matchups live on pay-per-view tonight, the Caravas Arena in North Carolina. Ring of Honor's Best in the World pay-per-view goes down tonight. And one of those marquee matchups, for sure, lots of folks have been talking about, is the fight without honor between Steve Corino and our guest at this time, Mr. B.J. Whitmer. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys this morning?
We're good, and he's live from the Charlotte International Airport.
Yes, I have just walked over to the rental car facility here. So, live at Charlotte Airport.
I'm sure you're cranked up for tonight, too. This thing with Corino, one of the reasons I'm looking forward to it is because the build, whether on purpose or by accident, has been how long has this thing gone on, BJ?
Like 27 months, I guess, from the first time that I grabbed a hold of him while he was sitting at the commentary table, I guess was like February of 2014. So yeah, it would put us at about 27 months or so. And I mean, the match should have happened before this point, but you know, injuries got in the way. I blew out my knee and worked through it for a while, but then it got to the point where I needed to have it fixed or it was going to do some damage to the knee that would affect me later on in life after wrestling. And then of course Steve had the neck injury, which pushed it back even further, and the neck surgery. So yeah, it took us a little while to get to this point, but we're finally here.
And the great thing is, you know, what little I've had the opportunity to watch is that in having it put off, and almost, well, a couple times you actually thought with Carino having the neck surgery that it wasn't going to happen at all, but it's got the, and during this 27 months, other than the deal at the announcer's table, you guys have never locked horns. It's all been a war of words, basically. And that came down to, you and I have talked about this before, is you're trying to do a promo on a show, and the audience absolutely would not let you do it.
Yeah, just besides, like, me just, like, grabbing by his lapels on his jacket one time. I think I smacked the headset off his head. And then he punched me with the roll of quarters in San Antonio, I believe it was. And then he grabbed me by the throat one time. So other than those four occasions, like, we haven't touched at all. So, you know, this will be the first time, like you said, we lock horns. And, yeah, like, pretty much the whole storyline has been basically a war of words and mind games. For the most part, which I think kind of speaks to, you know, what we've been able to do and get this build and, you know, be able to jump right into a match like a Fight Without Honor, with it being our first match ever.
And, you know, of course, as you know, you and I go way back. To me, that's been the unique thing, is that by accident, there has been so much heat, because it has been put off, and it's more, you know, more the old school style of building to a blow off. And I think that because Carino's always called himself the old school, that it's apropos that's basically how it's happened too.
Yeah, it wasn't really like truly by design that it go on this long. It just so happened that it did, and a lot of the what I call internet savvy fans or smart fans, those are the ones that realize that it's been going on since like February 2014. But for the more casual fan that just maybe doesn't watch all the house shows that are on video on demand or doesn't order the DVDs, this has only really been going on for maybe a little over a year now for them. So for the casual fan, it's like, oh man, this is, you know, a nice build, only like a year or so. But the more smart fans that know it's been a little longer than that, and they're kind of like, oh, the match needs to happen, but, you know, and kind of like are talking trash on it going so long. But, I mean, that wasn't by design, so it wasn't our fault necessarily that it drug on. But, I mean, by the reaction of the live audience at every show where we've had any interaction on the microphone or whatever, they're there with us, so I think that speaks to the volume of the angles, how the live crowd interacts with it.
Yeah, you know, and again, I'm not sure what the order of the matches are going to be, but I know there's title matches and et cetera. I don't know if you guys are going to be on last or in the middle of the card or wherever, but I would believe, due to the reaction that you've got from trying to, you know, the promos and the build for this thing, that it may be the most anticipated match on the entire card.
Yeah, a lot of people, like, just from the reaction, like, I get tagged on a lot of, like, Twitter posts and stuff like that. A lot of people are really looking forward to it, and I think we're up near the top. I think that the title match is last, and there might be something in semi. We might be third from the top. I'm not for sure on that, but I know we're up close to the top. But I'm also very old school in the fact that I believe the belt goes on last. That's kind of my philosophy on it. That's like the crown jewel of the promotion, is the world title. So in my opinion, that match should you know, almost always go on last. But, you know, with Ring of Honor, you've got the tag team division that hasn't been, for lack of a better term, killed off like it has, like, in other major promotions where they don't, you know, they just throw guys together. We have a legitimate tag team division, and, you know, you can throw that tag team, if you've got a very hot angle with, you know, involving the tag team titles, you can throw that on top in Ring of Honor, and that's kind of the beauty of how, you know, we've made our titles mean something.
Yeah, I don't know where you got that old school philosophy.
I don't know either.
Vic, don't hesitate to jump in here. I know you've got some questions to ask or some comments to make.
I do. I want to ask BJ about the length of that build, as you talked about, something in the area of 27 months, and obviously there's been some twists and turns. There's been a few injuries that have caused this to go on for the length of time that it has, and it's finally coming to a head on pay-per-view tonight, Ring of Honor Best in the World. But I want to ask you, in navigating those different bumps in the road, so to speak, and trying to create something memorable that has gone on for a while, you know, this is an era where WWE tends to run through storylines. I remember Les and I have discussed at length Hulk Hogan's comments a few years ago when he was running TNA and talking about how these days you have to start something at 9 and wrap it up by 11. How difficult and or gratifying has it been to be able to navigate this amount of time to build to this match tonight?
Getting around the injuries was a little difficult. You know, that kind of takes the wind out of your sails a little bit, but then you realize, you know, we're just going to keep on chugging through this. You know, we'll get through the injuries and we'll still make this happen. But yeah, like, I know me and Les have talked about this. Like, this is more or less, I call it like a microwave society. Like, everybody wants immediate gratification. Everybody wants things done, you know, very quickly and stuff like that. And I think it takes, when you rush through things and shotgun things like that, I think it takes away, like, what part of what I fell in love with about professional wrestling. And, you know, there was these storylines where you didn't get that instant gratification, and it made me want to tune in and make sure I was up at 9 a.m. Saturday morning to turn on, you know, like, as we had Crockett and a few other promotions was getting syndicated into Cincinnati, and I wanted to see what was going on with like Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen and stuff like that, and, you know, did they leave Ricky Morton land, or, you know, what happened, because it was always kind of a cliffhanger each week. So, you know, and, you know, if it got it paid off at the end of that show, then there was really no reason to tune in next week. So, you know, I'm a fan of that, you know, that slow build and leaving them wanting something more.
With respect to some of the videos I've seen, in fact, they're on YouTube and on the Ring of Honor Twitter feed over the last week and some change, about the devil over both of your shoulders, it seems like, with Steve Corino and yourself, BJ. How did those come about, and bringing in one Kevin Sullivan?
The company had a chance to use Kevin, and I felt he fit perfect into this role, because me and Steve talk about, you know, us having this evil side. And when you think of evil in professional wrestling, at least with me, one of the first names that comes to mind is Kevin Sullivan. So, yeah, we had a chance to do a couple things with him, and we jumped right at it.
So is it safe to say, well, you know what, I don't want you to give anything away, but might we actually see the devil over both of your shoulders at some point before the show's over?
I don't know. Let's tune in and find out.
You can buy the pay-per-view, BJ.
Yeah, you can get the pay-per-view on the Fight TV app. You can get it through ROHWrestling.com or your local satellite or cable provider.
I'm sure you're psyched up, and I mean, the long build, and finally here it is. And I know, to me, if I didn't feel a little wired before I went into a match, especially a match that is important as this one is for you, then I felt I was going to be flat out there. So I'm sure you've got a little case of the nerves even this early in the day.
Yeah, it's anytime you've got, like, a match of this magnitude, you have a little trouble sleeping the night before. As soon as you wake up, as soon as that alarm goes up, you're right up out of bed. There's no hitting snooze, you know, ready to get going. I was up, you know, getting breakfast, getting on my way to the airport this morning. I wouldn't feel right if I wasn't a little jazzed, you know what I'm saying? If I wasn't jazzed, I would be like, oh, what's going on here? Kind of thing. So yeah, definitely had a little trouble sleeping last night. Like I said, soon as that alarm went up, was right out of bed, ready to get it going.
Well, listen, we're not, you know, we'd love to sit and talk to you the rest of the day, and you and I will get a chance, hopefully, to sit down and talk about this next week. You know, we're going to be watching. We're going to wish you the best of luck, and we're going to let you go because you got to get a car and you got to get to the hotel and get ready to go. Just know from me personally, I love you, man, and I wish you the best of luck, and you know I'm in your corner, so God bless you.
Okay, thanks, Les. Love you too, buddy.
BJ, thanks for your time. It's Ring of Honor's Best in the World, which is going to be going on tonight live on pay-per-view from the Cabarrus Arena, Concord, North Carolina. That's the place where it's going down tonight, 9 p.m. on pay-per-view, by the way, to see Ring of Honor's Best in the World, which features a fight without honor, BJ Whitmer versus Steve Corino. BJ, thanks again. Best of luck tonight, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you just heard from the man, BJ Whitmer. He's got it all on the line tonight against Steve Corino in this fight without honor, Les. And I guess you're not going to be making any surprise run-ins to help him out.
No. No, it's a long, it's about 500-mile run from Cincinnati to Charlotte, or Concord, actually. So, no, I probably won't be making the trip. You know, the funny thing is, you know, my history with Kevin Sullivan is amazing as well because, gosh, we go way back. We worked in television production and a combination of booking and production, television production for two owners in Southeastern Championship Wrestling, for an independent in Knoxville, and then for Mario Savoldi's New England group back in the late 80s. And he and I and the late Nancy Sullivan Benoit produced a wrestling clip show for the CBS affiliate in Knoxville in the early 80s. And so, plus, you know, I had the opportunity to socialize with Kevin and his first wife, Jan, and their children, Shannon and Ben. And so, yeah, so we go way back. And you know what? This guy has got an amazing... You realize Kevin is not a giant of a man, but he made you believe. That whole, you know, tree of woe, taskmaster, whatever. And he's a damn Catholic Irishman from Boston, for God's sakes. But, you know, that particular gimmick got over in Florida to the point that they actually had a couple ministers in the state call the office in Tampa and ask Eddie Graham to take him off television. So they made believers out of some people in this thing. And, yeah, so I don't know if he's going to be involved or not, but, you know, but it's a little touch. And, you know, I'm just, that's, you know, obviously I'll try to watch the whole show, but, that's the match that, you know, that is important to me. And listen, you know, I'm so proud of BJ and happy, for, you know, here's a guy, somebody said to me a while back, well, you know what? He's not colorful. No, he's not. He's a journeyman worker. He can go out there and get it done. He can do what you need done. If I were to buy a company or start a promotion tomorrow and he were available to me, he would without fail be on my roster. As a lot of the guys we've talked about today, if I get my hand, you know, I would be more than happy to use. It's not just because I train him, but because he has a respect for the business. He understands the business, and you know, he's a journeyman. He's a blue collar worker, and there's not enough of those. You know, I mean, it's, and Carino's the same way. So that's what I'm excited to see in this thing, because it's obviously not going to be, you know, hurricane ranas and high spots. It's going to be a friggin' war, and they're probably going to knock the hell out of each other, but. I'm, you know, the thing, as we mentioned before, is to me, I didn't realize it had been 27 months, which is maybe a record setting in history of our business, that it's taken that long to put two guys together. I don't know. But, you know, the thing of it is, that's again, that makes a very valid point that, you know, the longer you tease people with something, and that's been a standard in this industry. You know, my 56th anniversary is coming up here in a few weeks, and actually, in a, I guess, 2 weeks. But, you know, that's always been a standard in the business. I don't give a damn, you know, what you call it or how you book it. You make people wait for something. You know, you tease them with it, offer it, take it away, offer it, take it away. And finally, when you give it to them, it means more.
And that fight without honor is one of several big matches on that pay-per-view tonight. You've also got a World Tag Team title match, which BJ alluded to, The Addiction, Kazarian and Daniels against Motor City Machine Guns. World Television Championship on the line, Bobby Fish and Dalton Castle. And the World Heavyweight Championship in Ring of Honor, Jay Lethal, who recently celebrated his first anniversary as Ring of Honor champion, over 1 year now, in a rematch against the man he defeated for that belt a little over a year ago, Jay Briscoe. Also on the card, you've got Kamatachi, a young man from New Japan Pro Wrestling who made quite a name for himself in Mexico and is going to be in Ring of Honor for a little while. If you haven't seen him yet, tonight will be a good opportunity for you to check him out. We've also got Moose, War Machine, The Bullet Club, Mark Briscoe on the card as well, Donovan Dijak.
You know, Dijak, I've had the opportunity to work with at Antonio Thomas's school up in Massachusetts a couple times. I've watched him grow, too. A nice kid. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Where were we?
I was going to mention Roderick Strong because it was announced this week that Roderick is going to be leaving Ring of Honor. And BJ would have been somebody good to ask, but I know he had to run, so I'll just put the question to you. Roderick Strong has been part of Ring of Honor for so long that on one hand you think to yourself, you know what, he's done pretty much everything there is to do. A break, if that's all it ends up being, for both sides, it's probably healthy for both of them. But by the same token, it's kind of hard to imagine Ring of Honor without Roderick Strong.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and Roddy, to me, some of the best technical matches I have seen on Ring of Honor, one of the two names that I would mention would be Roddy. And I've told him that. And, you know, he's a hell of a hand. He is a solid worker. Now, there's a lot of guys in this business that wear costumes and call themselves professional wrestlers or sports entertainers or whatever. And they may call themselves workers, but it's when somebody else with a background in the business calls you a worker, you can pretty much think that you are, and Roddy certainly is. I have good matches with Pepper Parks, Braxton Sutter, Kyle O'Reilly, a couple of the Japanese guys. You know, when it comes to, if I'm looking for technical excellence, he's the guy I'm going to tap. You know, he's that good. He is that good. And, I don't know for a fact, but, you know, I don't know if he's got, this gives him an opportunity to go, you know, if it had been possible to put him in this Cruiserweight Classic with NXT, would have been absolutely in his wheelhouse. No two ways about it. You know, he would have fit right in.
He does. You know what? It's so funny you say that. I was watching that opening ceremony and thinking to myself, man, this thing needs Roderick Strong.
Yeah, he's that good. He is, you know, and I saw the tweet that Triple H sent out about this thing where a new division has been formed, and I hope he's right. The cruiserweights, junior heavyweights, call them whatever you like, have been abused in terms of the way they're used. I mean, you know, it got girls beating them for the title and that sort of crap. And I say crap because that's exactly what it is. It's insulting to their talent. And so hopefully, you know, if nowhere else than in just NXT, that they add that division and give these guys you know, an opportunity to shine. I know someone asked me a couple weeks ago, well, how would you book this and differentiate it? I said I wouldn't differentiate it. You know, I went to, I saw one of the big AAU meets in Tampa. That was back in 71 when the Tampa Wrestling Office, you know, Championship Wrestling from Florida, sponsored it. And this was the top AAU wrestlers from around the country. And I said, the only difference in the heavyweights and the lightest guys was, you know, they were all wrestling, and the lighter guys obviously had quicker moves, but it was wrestling. And there's no reason that because you're, you know, it's not that you can't get in the air a little more because you're a cruiserweight, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't wrestle as well. You know, and I mean, here again, you look at UFC, and you know, no matter what the weight class, you're obviously your flyweights, you know, et cetera, move a lot quicker, but it's just the same sport. So you know, you don't have to be an acrobat to be a cruiserweight. Well, Gulak, you know, there's a guy who can wrestle your ass off. I agree with Finn Balor. You know, he is legitimately a good solid, has a good solid wrestling background. And, you know, so it's not necessary that he gets up in the air. So, and I think the fan, you know, if you take the time to present that style, the fans will, you know, again, BJ mentioned the microwave era, you know, where, yeah, you got to warm it up and it's got to be quick, which to a great degree, I guess, is true. But again, if you know how to present the product, you know, in an intriguing manner, they're going to buy it, you know. Nobody rush, you know, your average TV drama has, what, 13 episodes, 16 episodes, something like that. And they don't blow it off in the first two, you know. They give you enough to make you interested and to bring you back the following week. And so, yeah, I hope this is the start of something big for them. And, again, hopefully it will get a lot of young men a good, solid weekly paycheck and a chance to shine.
Cannot let this show get away from us without asking you about Roman Reigns and the biggest story, I guess, professional wrestling for the week, and his surprising test failure and subsequent 30-day suspension as a result of violating the WWE wellness policy. But before I do that, there is one other thing that we were about to get to before we got BJ Whitmer on the line to join us here. And that's a question we got on the board about the old Cincinnati Gardens that are getting ready to be taken down.
Yeah, do I have a history there? Is the Pope Catholic? Yes. You know what? Cincinnati Gardens, I think it was built in 1949. I'm not sure at which time, depending on what time in 49, I was either 8 or 9 years old. So I've seen so much there. I've done so much there. I've watched the old Cincinnati Royals NBA team play there with the great Big O, Oscar Robertson, and Jerry Lucas, who, by the way, are both Hall of Famers. If you're not, you don't go back that far with the NBA. I've seen roller derby there. I've seen, obviously, wrestling there. The very first, we were talking about this the other day with somebody, because the Gardens is being torn down. I'm not sure what they're going to build there, but it's finally coming down. Actually, they used to do indoor little small cars, stock, you know, like stock car racing, even in that damn place. A hockey team, the Cincinnati Cyclones, which is still in effect, and they play down on the Riverfront Coliseum, which was when it was brought to Cincinnati and initiated. Two of the three owners were people from wrestling, Ron Fuller and Bob Polk, who I work with both of these guys, you know, in the wrestling business. But what else? Oh, the very first traveling rock and roll show, and I couldn't have been more than 14 years old, probably 15 at the max, because my dad had to drop a friend of mine and I off at the Garden to go see this show. And you'll appreciate this, Vic. You're old enough, and all these names will be familiar with you because you're in the music business. But on this show were the Platters, Bill Haley and the Comets, Chuck Berry, the Teen Queens, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, Big Joe Turner, the Platters, I mentioned them, and all this, I think, for the absorbent price of probably $4 or $5 for a ticket. Yeah, that same show today, if these people are all on top of the rock and roll industry like they were back then, what, a $500 seat in the nosebleed section or something? But
today's money, that would be a ridiculously expensive ticket.
Would it ever? And virtually everybody we spoke about there is either should be or is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Joe Turner was one of my favorites, the Boss Man of the Blues, Big Joe Turner. But anyway, you know, wrestling set an attendance record in the Cincinnati Garden, and the match was UConn Eric and Wilbur Snyder against Angelo Poffo and Bronco Lubitsch. Some of the young people might have seen Lubitsch as a referee in Dallas, but Bronco was also a manager, but a hell of a heel. I actually had the opportunity to work with Bronco in ring when he and Aldo Bogni were one of the top heel teams in the Carolinas back in the 60s. But he was a manager for Angelo Poffo, Randy Savage's father at the time. And anyway, they set an attendance record in Cincinnati Garden, which I don't know if it was ever broken, to be honest with you. I don't have a clue. But yeah, I also had the opportunity to wrestle there. We've talked about, you know, cards. My God, on that, you know, I bought tickets to see people like Ray Stevens and Roy Shire and Red Bastien and the Bruiser, the Sheik, in that building. I had the opportunity to wrestle on. As I was going through some old stuff here the other day, Roger Kirby, the former World Junior Heavyweight Champion and my former tag team partner, is one of the wrestling cousins. When he and I were both, you know, green in the business, we worked an opener there, and with guys like Carl Gotch and Big Bill Miller and Dick the Bruiser and the original Sheik and Mark Lewin and people like that on the card. So yeah, it's you know, I feel bad, you know, a lot of history there, and it's sad that it's going to be lost. You know, so much. Well, actually, we ran the second Pillman Memorial Show in the Cincinnati Gardens. They cut us a nice deal on rent, and you know, that was the first show that Ric Flair appeared for us, and Ricky Steamboat. Steamboat came back for the next two that we had. Flair was unable to do that, but yeah, so we ran a Pillman Memorial Show, the second one in 1999, and an HWA, we're talking about cruiserweights, we had an HWA Cruiserweight Tournament, that we called it the Brian Pillman Cruiserweight Tournament, on that particular show. And actually, at the time, I was doing a three-hour block on the Clear Channel radio station here in Cincinnati, the All Sports, at the time was 1360. We had Wednesday night main event from 9 to midnight every Wednesday, and we actually went live from the Garden on the station, and of course had a bunch of the wrestlers on, and my co-host, Doc Love, Chris Rosenberger, and Patrick Black, who was the commissioner for HWA at the time. They manned the entire thing, you know, and I popped in and out, but we had, you know, all sorts of guests on that show too. So yeah, a lot of history with the Garden, and it's going to be torn down, and I'm not sure what's going up there, but that's coming in the near future.
Now, with it being essentially your hometown arena, would you say that was the favorite place of yours to appear, or was there another building, another territory that when you think of, you say, that's the place I had the most fun?
I was lucky to have wrestled in the Greensboro Coliseum, and I guess the Garden too. I never had the opportunity to wrestle at the old Music Hall here, which is still around, by the way, and they still have in fact, they're renovating that at the cost of several million, I guess. But I attended wrestling matches. Actually, the first wrestling matches I attended were there at Music Hall here in Cincinnati. And there was an outdoor arena, Central Parkway. Music Hall is actually on Central Parkway, and a few blocks on away from downtown, they had a place called Parkway Arena, which they held. It was actually down, like, it wasn't at street level. You went downstairs into, it was like a valley or a pit. I don't know if it was dug out or expressly for this, but I guess they had boxing in there as well. But in the summer, Al Haft promotion ran wrestling in there, and I had the opportunity to actually wrestle in that arena, Parkway Arena, outdoors. Which was one of the three places that I attended wrestling as a kid. So, yeah, so there's, you know, great memories, great memories.
We're going to close the show here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, talking about the thing that's been on the front of everybody's mind, I guess, for most of the week. Roman Reigns on the shelf for a minimum of 30 days. And Les, far be it from me to be a cynic. Well, actually, I'm a New Yorker. It comes with the territory.
So you were born a cynic.
Basically, yes. Yeah, pretty much. But
It's not lost on me that the man is going to be gone for the next 30 days and walks right back into another pay-per-view main event. In my mind, it's pretty easy to say that this is not going to cost him a thing other than 30-day vacation. At least it seems that way on the surface. Your thoughts on the suspension, the idea that a guy gets to walk back into a main event, and then we get into a whole thing about who's favorites and how many strikes Randy Orton has had over, I don't know. But what do you think at when you see this?
I think it's what's best for business, and that's all it's about. One of the things I want to mention, the experts, and again, you'll see my fingers in quotations if you were here, on the internet have ripped poor Roman to pieces. He's not the first guy to fail the test. He won't be the last guy to fail the test. There are athletes in every other sport that has failed the test. First of all, we don't know why he's failed the test. You know, I mean, was it something that actually was an ingredient in a cross-the-counter supplement, which has legitimately happened as a competitive bodybuilder? There were certain supplements at the MPC that you could buy at GNC or your favorite supplements, vitamin store, that MPC said you're best not to take this because if you're in a drug-tested show, it will show up as a banned substance because for whatever reason. I'm not a chemist, so I can't tell you. So, what was this for? I don't know. Are they doing what they think is best for their business? They absolutely are. I talked about this the other day with somebody, and I said, you know, the fact that companies do what's best for business isn't isolated to the professional wrestling or sports entertainment industry. If you read the book, I mean, you may have, North Dallas 40 by Pete Gent. Have you ever read that?
No,
I haven't read
the book.
Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Chris Christopherson. Anyway, damn, I'm getting choked up. Pete Gent was a wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys, North Dallas 40. This is where the Cowboys training facility, as far as I know, it's been a number of years since I read the book and obviously a number of years the movie, I guess you might still find on Netflix, maybe. In the book, Gent was not a starter, he was sort of a guy that marched to his own drummer, so he wasn't a favorite of all the coaches and so forth. In one chapter of the book, it mentions they were at a party. A number of the Dallas players were at a party thrown by a rather wealthy fan in the Dallas area. And sitting out by the pool, a couple of the guys were passing around a joint, grass, marijuana, weed, whatever. And point is that I guess somebody reported this to Dallas management, to the Cowboys management. And Gent was called on the carpet about this, and I'm not sure if there was a penalty or wrist slap. I mean, this wasn't something that came up in front of the league. But also, Gent doesn't name a name, but he mentions that the starting quarter in the book, of course, the book is obviously supposedly fiction taken from real-life events, but in the book, the starting quarterback was also part of this. Well, the starting quarterback at that particular time when Gent played for the Cowboys was Don Meredith, that he had partaketh of this grass as well. But nothing was done about that. The point being that starting quarterback is far more important, but we have to make an example out of this basically second string wide receiver. So my point is that, again, you know, it's not just confined to our business, but it's what's best for business is what we're going to do. So the fact that it's working this way, I guess I'm going all around the block to get to this point, is that it doesn't surprise me. It's probably not the first time that things like this have been manipulated. It may be the first time that we've become aware of it, or it just jumps off the page that that's what's happening. Am I surprised? No.
If it were you, would he be walking back into a main event? Would you be using these 30 days to sort of reevaluate whether or not this is the right spot for Roman Reigns at this particular time?
Well, what I would be doing, I think, if I were a publicly held concern, a corporation that's more concerned with the image of their officers than they are what their athletes do, I would think that probably I might have stripped him of the belt at the pay-per-view, and I'm not sure exactly what I would have done at that point, but I maybe just taking the belt off of him made his match with Seth a grudge match and a non-title match, and I'm sure somebody is grabbing themselves somewhere and saying, "Oh, Les Thatcher, that's not possible." But here's the point: if you're trying to sell your credibility, your corporation's credibility, and some sort of legitimacy within your wellness program and everything else, then I don't know how to say it any more graphically than that. Would that make sense?
Yeah. I guess what I'm asking you is, clearly they've made their decision, and just as they've had every opportunity to evaluate or really reevaluate where they've positioned them in the company, they've doubled down every time. I respect their right to do that.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm asking is, in this 30-day period, would you be using it to reevaluate it, or would you have no issue with putting him right back in the spot he's in?
Well, you might not put him right back in a title picture, but let me ask you this: these guys, like in baseball, let's say for example, if you're the cleanup hitter, if you're the number four guy in the batting order, and you get popped for this. When you come back, are you regulated to eighth in the lineup or in a reserve position? No.
No, they can't wait to put you back in the cleanup.
Exactly. So, again, if we are trying to emulate, or whatever, a real sport, then probably what they're doing with him is not bad. I'm a UFC fan, but I don't follow it as graphic, as the way Dave and Brian do. So I can't say, I don't have an answer for what I'm about to pose here. But the guys there that have been popped with Bones Jones, he's been popped, for this, that, and the other thing. And is he back in a title picture?
Believe it.
Okay. Then that, I'm just saying, this is not isolated to our particular industry. It's something that's going to happen. If you're a major player, you'll be a major player when you come back, I would think.
Getting ready to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, Les. But before we do that, let everybody know where they can get a hold of you. Where perhaps potential future recruits into the Cruiserweight Tournament can have their opportunity to work with Les Thatcher.
I would love to, yes. You can reach me, Les, at EPWT.com, Les Thatcher at Zoomtown.com. I am open for bookings. I do three things that are, that are locked in. July 8, 9, and 10, I am in Richmond, Virginia, Ground Zero Wrestling. We're doing a Q&A on Friday night, training all day Saturday and Sunday. There's a show Saturday night there. I was up in Richmond a few years ago, and Dave McLeod, the owner, has got to a bigger facility. They've been improving their stance in the wrestling community. I'm really looking forward to going back. If you'd like to join us there, you can call 804-356-0583 or email GXW, Mr. Cullen, that's C-U-L-L-E-N, at gmail.com. July the 30th, I'm in Cornelia, Georgia. It's a whole day affair there for Why We Wrestle. Derek Thorne is the owner. This is at the Church of Southern Wrestling, which was at one time the home base for NWA Wildside and NWA Anarchy. We're doing a one day, and there's a show on Saturday night. My co-trainer is George South. We're looking forward to working with my buddy George. One of the things I think we're going to do, Derek and I have talked about, is after warm-ups on Saturday morning, George and I are going to choose teams. I mean, we're both going to critique everybody as a group, but he will have, Team South and Team Thatcher, and then at the end of the day, the top trainee from both teams will wrestle in each other as part of the show on Saturday night. You can go to their, they have a Facebook page, or you can email thisiswhywewrestle@gmail.com. Then, of course, August 19, 2021, Paulsboro, New Jersey. That's for the Monster Factory Super Camp show on Saturday night. And along with myself, Bob Evans, Rudy Gonzalez, and the former WWE's strength coach, Matt, I can't think of his last name, Joel Gertner is going to be on hand, and Joel's going to be doing a seminar, I'm sure, on promos, and I think it's called Everything But In-Ring Wrestling or something like that. Look forward to, you know, working with Bob and Rudy and Joel, and of course, the trainers, you know, Martinez, Luis, and QT, and Danny, you know, and Meanie, and all the gang. I love going there. You know, the energy is so much like HWA in its heyday, it's always a great time. I guess you'll probably pop in, will you not, Victor? Vic, hello.
I will be at the Monster at the Monster Factory, right?
Did I wake you up? I'm sorry. Yeah, yes, at the Monster Factory.
Yes, I will be at the. I want my light up sunglasses. I'm going to.
My God, yeah, Anthony better have another pair for me. Mine are worn out. Anyway, you can go. www.monsterfactory.org, or you can call Danny at 609-471-7904, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
Sitting here tweeting out to my millions of followers, Les.
Your millions of followers?
Well, 1,000.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, this is the wrestling business. You can blow it up as best you like.
Well, in that case, my 10 million followers have just been made aware that BJ Whitmer is joining us on the show this week. So I got that out there in advance of actually having a chance to post the show, just to build a little anticipation, Les. You know.
Cool. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, it's, you know, I think the Cruiserweight tournament, the deal with BJ and Carino, I'm excited. You know, and you know me, I don't get excited about a lot of things anymore, except the fact that I wake up in the morning breathing, and that's probably the most exciting thing that happens.
Well, well, you're going to the gym today, though, right?
Oh, of course. If it's Friday, it's chest and tris and abs. And, of course, you know, depending on how the knees are feeling, it'll be 20 to 30 minutes on the stationary bike.
Yeah. Well, there's a little something to look forward to.
Yeah. You're going too, right?
I am. Today is deadlift day.
All right. You young guys in deadlifts, huh? The only thing dead I lift anymore is myself. That's pretty much it.
Well, I'm going to let you get to your ab and chest and stationary bike workout. I'm sure you're secretly shredded right now, and I'm going to be so jealous when I see you at the Monster Factory.
Oh, I wish I were secretly or openly shredded, but I'm afraid I'm not. But it's a great thought anyway, Vic.
Well, you still got some time, so we'll get to work on that.
Yeah, but, yeah, okay, cool. You think we can get billboard status today? Is that possible?
We're going for 3 weeks in a row. We're kind of hot right now.
You know, I didn't see it. Where the hell? They must have thrown it. You know, they must be teasing me. You told me we were up, and I went to look, and we weren't up. So, what's up with that?
It depends on how many things end up on the front page over the course of that day, because it's a little rotating thing. What we're talking about, folks, is the rotating pictures with the stories on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. We've been kind of on a roll there. We were good and fortunate enough to make the front page there on the rotating billboard a couple weeks in a row. And unfortunately, Les, I alerted you a little too late because they had posted a bunch of stories, and I guess we had been bumped off the billboard.
I think they were just screwing with me anyway. I don't know. it was they're teasing me. I'm an old man, and you're picking on me. Oh my God, that's what it is. Anyway, yeah. So, you know, they don't have, you know, they can just send us plane tickets to Vegas for the Observer Figure Four convention, reunion, party, whatever the hell they want to call it. That would work instead of billboardness, wouldn't it?
Or, as Bobby Heenan used to say, you won't offend me with cash.
Yeah, you damn sure won't offend us with cash either, so that would work.
We're wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. He is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thanks again to our special guest, BJ Whitmer.
Best in the World takes place tonight, Friday night, on pay-per-view here in the States. Ring of Honor, 9 p.m. Hope you get a chance to check that out. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to spend it with us, and we'll talk to you again next week.